Good morning, Honorable Sir.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hello. Abani. Is the minister in now? Good morning, DM Holomisa.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members.
Ah, there is a staff.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Good morning, everybody.
Honorable Wittenbach, good morning.
How are you, Mr. Chair?
I'm okay, and you?
Fine, thank you. May I ask for half a minute before we start to say something, please?
Yes, Honorable Breitenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Janji. Good morning.
Well, we need to vet what she wants to say first. I don't just agree. You just let's check what she wants to say.
It's about you.
No, Honorable Janji, you must know that Honorable Breitenbach, although she stays in Cape Town now, but she's from Pretoria. So she is pre-vetted.
So I just want to check, it's okay. Thank
be afraid.
You.
Be very afraid.
Good morning, Minister. I'm not sure if you can hear me.
Now I can hear you. I can see you, Minister, and I can hear you.
Okay. No, that's fine. I was just checking if you can hear me.
No, we can hear you properly. Now that you are in, I think it will be important for us to start. Good morning, to everyone in the. In the platform and to everyone watching at home, we will be receiving overview from the minister. Who's disturbing us now? So we'll be receiving a political overview from the minister covering all entities reporting to the Department of Justice and Correctional Services. And welcome to also the deputy ministers, Deputy Minister Patekile Olomisa and Deputy Minister John Jeffrey. But before we proceed, let me start by, before I allow Honorable Breitenbach and Honorable Swart to speak, to say that we are meeting, this is the first meeting after the departure of our beloved member, Honorable Mofokeng, who passed on during recess. During our hour of need, we were comforted by words of comfort, especially from the members of the opposition, from the Democratic Alliance, and from the ACDP. We were very grateful to receive those words of comfort. It has been a blow to us as a committee and to the African National Congress, and I think to the people of South Africa, on the untimely departure of our beloved sister, friend, and colleague. During this period, I will allow Honorable Breitenbach, followed by Honorable Swart.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Good morning to everybody. I just want to again express on behalf of the Democratic Alliance our sincerest condolences to the ANC members of the committee and to the ANC in general on the passing of the Honourable Mofokeng. She was indeed a very valuable member of this committee. She was also a friend and she will be missed. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Breitenbach. Honourable Swart.
Thank you, Chair, and morning to you, morning to all the colleagues, morning to all the guests. And I want to just also from the ACDP side repeat our deepest condolences to the ANC and to the family of the Honourable Jackie Mofokeng. She was a dear friend of us, a dear friend of mine on the committee, and we were deeply, deeply shocked. I was deeply shocked when I heard of her untimely passing. I remember so clearly our last meeting when she was joking with me about being more light-hearted and welcoming a more light-hearted approach from my side. A few jokes here and there amongst all the seriousness of the issues we were dealing with. And so I personally, and I know the ACDP and all of us South Africans will miss her dearly. She was a very valuable person of this committee, made very valuable contributions. And our thoughts and prayers are with her family and with all her friends and colleagues in the ANC. Thank you so much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Swart. We were indeed, I want to repeat, very much comforted by all the words of comfort from yourselves. I think it is in times like this that defines us as one nation, that irrespective of our political differences, but we are indeed compatriots at heart. We were very grateful to all the messages of support. In that vein, I would also want to announce that I've received correspondence from the African National Congress appointing Honorable Qobutile Janji as the acting whip of the ANC in order to facilitate political management. For other political parties, please be aware that the whip of the ANC, the acting whip of the ANC, will be Honorable Janji until further notice. Thank you very much. Welcome, Minister. And I'll take this opportunity to hand over to you to address us.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for the opportunity to come before the Portfolio Committee and give this overview of the department. Honorable Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee, as we meet today, we are reminded that as Pelelanga, we should a dedicated member of this committee, Umama Ujeku Mofokeng, as all members of this committee and various political parties represented in this committee have already said, this committee and parliament in general will dearly miss her insightfulness and thought-provoking contributions. She was a selfless servant leader who represented the Portfolio Committee, Parliament, and the people of South Africa with honesty and integrity. She devoted many years of service to the cause of creating a better South Africa. She gallantly fought for a non-sexist, safer South Africa for women and children. She shall be fondly remembered, and may her soul rest in peace. Honorable Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee, you are well aware that the mandate of the Department of Correctional Services of contributing towards creating safer communities in South Africa. Through our efforts of rehabilitating offenders and enabling their successful reintegration into society, we want South Africans from all walks of life to be safe. Various initiatives are spearheaded by correctional services to ensure that offenders are not just warehoused, but provided with the programs to skill them, address their criminal behavior, shape their perspective on honest living and abhorring behavior which brought them into conflict with the law. We also have outreach programs warning communities, more especially youth, on the consequences of crime. These programs warn young people about dangers of seeing delinquent peers as role models, leading to engaging in activities that result in serving sentences at our centers. Young people must internalize hard work, prioritize education, and work with law enforcement agencies to squeeze the space which criminal elements operate from. Even ourselves, we prioritize creating opportunities for young people. When adversities of budget cuts confronted and prevented the department to absorb 2,000 learners who were trained, we intervened and instructed the department to reprioritize the budget so that these young people can be employed. We can now announce and confirm that on the 1st of June, the first group of learners, totaling 982, will be absorbed throughout our regions. This, honorable members, is in line with our plans of employing 20% of youth within the department in this current financial year. And over the medium-term expenditure framework period, we target to employ 40% of the youth. Honorable Chairperson, as you will be aware, the department develops inmates through skills to bolster their employment probabilities upon their release in an effort to reform their criminal character. The DCS has illustrative examples of parolees and probationers who, after undergoing various training programs offered at our centers, went on to establish themselves in business and created economic opportunities for their communities. While this is commendable, efforts to empower victims should equally not be left behind. We have intervened in the opportunities also for the victims of crimes. In the MTFF period, you will see more victim-focused programs in DCS. Victims' engagements will no longer be confined to participation in restorative justice. The unique lifelong needs of victims who were robbed of breadwinners through acts of crime will be factored into our program. And this we will do while we also support the Victim Empowerment Bill that has been published by the Department of Social Development, which is also aimed to enhance the life of victims. Consequences of lack of parental guidance, support, and income for children who lose parents from crime have been laid bare for all of us to see. These are in no doubt contributing factors to a subsequent criminal behavior of those children they seek ways to make ends meet. Community corrections has been instructed to identify such cases and intervene accordingly. Chairperson and honorable members of the portfolio committee, offenders are not just sitting idly in our cells day and night. They are contributing meaningfully to society. We have seen various projects where offenders provided their labor in community empowerment projects. To mention just a few, in the Western Cape, offenders have built a school and a pharmacy, saving government lots of money. We will be opening this soon in the areas of Osadon and George. In Mpumalanga, offenders developed a sporting field in Bushbuck Ridge and refurbished 1,000 school decks for 10 different schools. In Gauteng, offenders are developing a sporting field for Skeen Primary School in Alexandra to enable learners to participate in soccer and netball. This is in line with ensuring that young people have got platforms to participate in sporting activities. Production is also continuing at large scale in farms across correctional centers. Vegetables, fruits, meat, milk, eggs, and bread are produced. Production workshops are also producing uniforms and textile materials. These initiatives are part of our self-sufficiency model that we want to see fully implemented. Work is advanced in this regard. We will, in this financial year, honorable members, pilot the business case mechanism for self-sustainability, revenue generation, and retention mechanism. This is a significant shift in our program. And we will request that if anything that the portfolio committee wants to remember us with regards to DCS should be the self-sustainability model that we are now putting into full operation. One of the areas of concern in correctional services remains poor audit outcomes arising from lack of proper accountability, high regular expenditure, and inability to finalize cases and disciplinary processes. We have set a target for an unqualified audit outcome with significantly reduced findings this financial year. This is in preparation for obtaining a clean audit outcome in the next financial year. We will not hesitate to crack the whip for deviation from this target. We cannot continue operating outside government prescripts. We will also ensure that the recommendations from institutions such as the Special Investigation Unit are implemented to the letter. House Chairperson, we want to reiterate that correction is a societal responsibility. Let us work together to create safer communities in South Africa. COVID-19 might have disrupted some of our plans, but we must continue adapting to the new normal. South Africans deserve a crime-free society where they can go on with their lives without fearing to being attacked by criminal elements. On the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, will this year be marking a significant milestone in our constitutional democracy? Our 25th year anniversary of the Constitution as the supreme law of our country. This anniversary comes at a very critical time in our nation. COVID-19 has been a pandemic that has impacted all aspects of our lives and has really put Section 36 of our Constitution to test. In our quest to contain this pandemic and preserve as many lives as possible, we have had to ensure that the important decisions and actions we implement do not subvert human rights in a manner that cannot be justified. Honorable members, as we mark the 25 years of the Constitution, we are confronted with the reality that we cannot legislate consciousness. For the Constitution to live up to its promise, all of us are required to embody its principles. We are required to live to its expectations. Every citizen must be an active citizen. Every citizen must reaffirm their consciousness that we, the people, recognize the injustices of the past. This affirmation should trigger citizens of all races to take up the fight against systematic racism, homophobia, and xenophobia. We will announce a series of programs that will take place throughout the year to mark this significant milestone. Honorable Chairperson, at our last gathering, I made it clear that the performance of the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development suggested to me and the Deputy Minister, Mr. John Jeffrey, that it was a department that required renewal. Today, I can assert that the renewal of the department has started. Critical vacancies at the highest level of the department have been filled and will continue to be filled with the best personnel we can find. As a result, we have begun the process to reassert the Justice College as a center to enhance the capacity of our officials, but also to position the college as a service provider for justice-related services to other departments and the continent as a whole. One of the milestones we will be pursuing in this financial year is both the development and the implementation of the Justice College turnaround strategy. In terms of the integrated and modernizing systems of the criminal justice system through the use of technology, the department is making substantial investment on the modernization program to support these initiatives. Similarly, we are putting more efforts in the integrated justice system as part of accelerating the digitization and the modernization of the justice system. There are a variety of information and communication technology projects which are being implemented as part of the integrated justice management system, which are geared towards the modernization of the criminal justice system. These projects are implemented across various departments in the security cluster. IT infrastructure is key to the success of this project. Progress has been made with regards to the following projects: case integration. To date, case management business applications have been developed and implemented for SAPS, NPA, the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, the Department of Social Development, and Legal Aid South Africa. System development processes are nearing completion for the Department of Correctional Services Integrated Management Systems, as well as the court online solutions for the Office of the Chief Justice. It should be noted that significant progress has been made in the rollout of the IMS Remind module to a number of DCS sites. A number of cases have been electronically processed via the IJS transversal hub. Using system integration between the SAPS, NPA, and the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, these electronic information exchanges include associated docket ready notifications, docket requests, electronic charge sheets, and electronic case outcomes, postponement, date, and reasons. Integration. The solution is in operation nationally across 9 provinces. Currently, 8 government departments entities are connected to the IJS hub and able to electronically exchange information. The integrated departments include the SAPS, the NPA, Legal Aid South Africa, the Department of Home Affairs, DCS, and the Department of Social Development, which are currently at the pilot stage. In addition, SASSA is also connected for the purpose of person identity verification against the Department of Home Affairs database. Establishing connectivity to the Office of the Chief Justice has progressed significantly and set for implementation. The successful development and implementation of the electronic legal aid application solution that overhauls the management of approving of providing legal aid services to citizens is another key milestone in the IJS project. The use of person identification and verification application. PIVA provides the critical person-related function at SAPS stations, enabling the identity of arrested individuals to be verified using their fingerprints and checked against the Department of Home Affairs records. PVA is now available in 746 police stations across the country. Chairperson, this is an integration program that we believe will modernize, will also help us to have an efficient criminal justice system. Honorable members, the Master's Office is also a mark for a significant change this year. We will be introducing an online deceased estate system by the end of this financial year. We shall have piloted both the trust and the online deceased system. This inevitably brings the Master's Office into the digital age. We are also looking forward to the report of the SIU in this part of the justice family, so that we are able to deal with systematic challenges that we have encountered with regards to the Master's Office. And we believe the digitization process will also help us to deal with the lines that are seen across the country in the Master's Offices. Honorable Chairperson, we can proudly say that the State Attorney's Amendment Act has been operationalized both in words and in deeds. As we sit here today, all the seats of the High Courts also have regional heads in the offices of the State Attorney. This effectively will create an environment for better management of state litigation. Honorable members, as I've said on previous occasions, the transformation of the legal sector cannot be achieved by government alone. For the transformation of societal function, it is within this context that we'll publish the legal sector code for comment through DTI in the coming weeks. The legal sector code will go a long way in creating an accountable mechanism. By the end of this financial year, this department must be able to account for the following outcome: modernization and the digitization of the justice service platforms, improve organizational capabilities and good governance, improve awareness of justice services and constitutionalism, increase access to justice services, improve master services, transform colonial apartheid era justice-related legislation, transform state litigation services, the transformed legal profession, advance constitutionalism, human rights, and the rule of law, reduction of crime and corruption through the effective prosecution. The Director General and this team, as well as the National Director of Public Prosecution, will certainly embellish each of these outcomes in more detail over the medium term period. In enhancing the fight against corruption, the department has an indicator dealing with the establishment of specialized commercial crimes courts. The department targets to establish two specialized commercial crimes courts during 2021 financial year. In addition, the department will develop a position paper on the review of existing anti-corruption legislation and institutional arrangements. The NPA will continue with the program of aspirant prosecutors, where young graduates are recruited into the ranks of the NPA. This will strengthen their work and incapacitating the NPA, but also reinvigorate them by bringing new talent and new energy. Institutionalizing ethics and accountability by drawing on international good practices is critical. As a result, the Office of Complaints and Ethics will be established during this financial year in the NPA to enable members of the public to report issues of a breach of ethics and conflicts by prosecutors countrywide. This is a significant development, honorable members. We will also continue to support the State Capture Commission of Inquiry to finalize its work, as we believe it is very important for our democracy, and its recommendations will renew our democracy as we celebrate the 25 years of our constitution. We're also pleased to announce, Chairperson, that from the 1st of April 2021, this year, the transfer of the land rights management facility from the Department of Rural Development and Agriculture to Legal Aid South Africa has started. This will enable access, easy access to those who seek land justice and for those who seek to protect their rights against arbitrary eviction countrywide. Honorable members, as we assess the plans of the Office of the Chief Justice, I would like to invoke the wise counsel of retired justice of the Constitutional Court in the matter of Chief Lisapo versus Northwest Agricultural Bank and another in 2001, which stated our courts are a bulwark against vigilantism and the chaos and anarchy which it causes. Construed in this context of the rule of law and the principle against self-help in particular, access to court is indeed of cardinal importance. These are the ways, are the wise ways of retired Justice Yvonne Mokgoro. It is becoming alarmingly easy for people to make sensational allegations about members of the judiciary. It is almost as if people forget that the judiciary does not invite itself into our affairs. Rather, it is our failure of consciousness or at times our inability to manage our own conflicts that does so. Our ability to debate the outcomes of court decision as a nation should not descend into conspiracy theories and personal attacks against judicial officers. In this financial year, the Office of the Chief Justice as a national department will be evaluated in the main on three strategic outcomes: effective and efficient administrative support, improved court efficiency, and enhanced judicial performance. To achieve the above outcome, OCJ will expand and evaluate initiatives such as rolling out more court online systems as the country continues to fight the COVID-19 pandemic. It is important to ensure that the access to justice is not compromised and the courts remain operational in line with the directives of the Chief Justice. All of us know and have experienced the impact of budget constraints. Baseline reductions will impact on service delivery and therefore, we will simply have continued to do more with less. It is a reality that we all have to face. The APPs for the 2021-22 financial year therefore takes into account this important factor and introduces measures to keep our courts open whilst also ensuring the safety of our users and officials. The capacitation of the South African Judicial Education Institute remains one of the key priorities for the OCJ. An adequately capacitated Sanjay is important for the training of serving and aspirant judicial officers and ultimately the delivery of quality services. During this period of COVID-19 pandemic, Sanjay will leverage on virtual platforms to continue providing training to judicial officers. Honorable members, these are the plans that we present to you for your input and assessment. I personally look forward to your feedback on behalf of the departments under the Minister of Justice and Correctional Service. I would like to conclude by acknowledging that it is not the ideas that make a difference. Rather, it is the implementation and hard work that counts. Thank you very much, Chairperson, for this opportunity.
Thank you very much, Minister, for the overview that covers all the entities reporting to the Department of Justice and Correctional Services. I will now note members who would want to make input or ask questions to the minister. I have Honorable James Sir, Honorable Glenis Breitenbach, Honorable Kola Mola, Honorable Loma Temba Maswego Jele, Honorable Werner Horn, Honorable Swart, Honorable Devote Dachens, in that order. Honorable Sir.
Thank you very much indeed, Chairperson, and thanks for that introduction. I was pleased to hear that the 923 learners are going to be absorbed into the department from the 1st of June. But I would like to inquire what is going to happen to the cohort of 1,025 learners who finished their training in DCS on the 11th of December 2020, because it apparently appears that those learners are not going to be absorbed into the department. And I'd like to know what the situation is. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Breitenbach, before you proceed, we all received the request by Honorable Honorable Swart to leave at 10. I was asking if you can be so kind just to allow him to ask the question so that he can leave for the Chief Whip's Forum.
No problem at all.
Thank you very much, Honorable Glenis Breitenbach. Honorable Swart.
Chair, thank you so much to the colleagues. I will be very brief. I just wanted to firstly thank the Minister for his input, and I particularly welcome his comments protecting the judiciary from unwarranted criticism. I would, obviously, will engage more with the turnaround at the Master's Office and at the State Attorney's Office, but the issue relating to the transfer from the land rights from rural development to legal aid, you said that is in process. Firstly, will there be a budget, will be accompanied? That is something we raised in the previous parliament, that the budget should go from that department to legal aid. And then secondly, the state capture, you indicated the state capture commission that you support the finalization of that. And then in that regard, we remember that the Minister of Finances said there'd be no further funds available. Are you indicating that the funds will be found within the department to finalize and fund the completion of the state capture commission? The last issue I quickly want to touch on, and this is no aspersion or against any member of this committee that serves on the Judicial Services Commission, but I am concerned about some of the comments that some of the members of Parliament made at the last sitting of the Judicial Services Commission, in particular some of the unwarranted criticism of some of the judges. I would like this, Chair, we need to find a way, and again, I want to emphasize that this is no aspersion on members that are on this committee that serve with diligence. But all the members there that are members of Parliament represent me, and I wish to disassociate myself from any comments that would have come from any members of the Commission, members of Parliament or not, of an anti-Semitic nature, where certain judges were asked about working on the Sabbath, or whether their background of serving on the Jewish Board of Deputies, I think it is unwarranted. No Christian judge or Muslim judge are asked these questions, and I think these are issues we need to discuss broader as a committee. Should there be some rules or something that we amend the legislation? But I just wanted a broader comment. At some stage, we can have a discussion. I know the minister is here. He serves on it, and members of this Portfolio Committee also serve on that, but it is of great concern to me as a long-standing member of Parliament that some of the issues that took place, and I'm sure other members might share those concerns. Whilst we understand robust engagement, robust questioning, I think that some, and it's been highlighted in commentary as well, that some of the comments, some of the questions might have been unwarranted. Thank you, Chair. I'll leave it at that. And I will try to monitor the responses as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Glenis Breitenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to know from the Honorable Minister, he says there's a rollout of specialized commercial crime units to two areas, I presume there are more in the pipeline. I'd like to know what kind of study was done before these were rolled out. Because in my view, and he's welcome to differ and prove me wrong, but in my view, they're being rolled out in areas where there is no significant prospect of a huge amount of commercial crime occurring. They're being rolled out in areas that are not huge commercial areas. And so the potential for large-scale commercial crime seems to me to be quite small and could easily be dealt with by specialized commercial crime units that are located in nearby provinces or at nearby centers. And what motivated them to roll out specialized commercial crime units in these areas rather than use those resources to beef up the existing specialized commercial crime units to allow them to cover a larger footprint. I would like to know about the cost effectiveness of this rollout and a little bit more about the background. Then, as the minister says, implementation is key. He's quite right. His plan is fine. What he has presented to us sounds wonderful. I've got no doubt that on paper it's terribly impressive, but we've seen no implementation, or very little in fairness, over the past 2 years. When will we see implementation? It's no good presenting plans. Fancy plans are written in offices by people who don't have to implement them. I want to know when we're going to, just one instance of successful implementation of one of these pretty plans, please. Then the integrated justice system, well, we hear about it, we've been hearing about it since I came to Parliament in 2014. In my view, it's made no progress. Again, please prove me wrong. I'd be very happy to be wrong. How many dockets have been loaded onto this system, and how many have been successfully dealt with on this system? When in practice, we must all be aware of the serious challenges of a system that relies on electronics, given the resources that we currently have. So I'd like a little more detail about that. Then it's now, what's the date today? The 5th of May. So it's 5 days short of a year since Ms. Lorraine Rousseau was suspended for disciplinary action. How far is that disciplinary matter? Is there any progress being made? If so, what? Disciplinary matters are supposed to be dealt with within 60 days of suspension. We're now at 360. So can we have an update on some progress there, please? And if there is none, why? And then with regards to the Western Cape High Court, just recently, weeks ago, the entire complement, or almost the entire complement of proposed acting judges was stopped at the very last moment by the minister. I'm sure he had a very good reason for doing it. If you could share with us what the reason was, because it caused chaos in the courts. Matters were enrolled. Counsel arrived at the doors of the courts to be told that there were no judges to hear their matters. Costs were incurred. So what was the problem? What is the problem? What is being done about it? And then just in general, as an add-on to that question, what criteria, what process and what criteria is used when acting judges are appointed? Because, you know, in this last batch of interviews at the JSC, there were some judges who were acting who, it was so, I mean, clear as daylight to anybody that they were not, in my view, suitable. And on what basis were they approved to be acting in the first place? I'd like more detail on that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Breitenbach, Honorable Kuala Mola.
Thank you very much, Chair. Indeed, let's welcome the political overview from the Minister, particularly when it relates to the correctional services learners, which have been on our back for the period at which they had doubts about their future and their fate in the department. Indeed, it is common cause that we are operating under serious difficulties, which has caused the economy to contract heavily, and all that. It's an experience all of us we have never seen before. But I think part of what has kept those learners of DCS at limbo was the non-communication by the management of the plans of the department in terms of their learnership going forward. I think
the management would have drawn a lesson from that. Hence, they're going around writing to the plant protector, writing to all of us as members of the committee and all that. I think next time, I would just advise that the management of the department must be able to interact with them properly, so that they keep this thing of matters being made to the public without proper consultation and all that. The second of which is the issue of the self-sustainability model the minister is talking about, which I think would be a key resource reservoir for the department, not to solely rely on the national treasury for it to continue and execute its mandate. But I think I would just suggest that, Chair, that let's note this self-sustainability model. Honorable Gyanji, we make it an item in the next subcommittee meeting, so that they give detail on what it entails and the plans going forward. Of course, Chair, we welcome the revival of the NPA aspirant prosecutor program. It serves a number of things, Chair, and it helps government in to address a number of things, inclusive of which is increasing the capacity of NPA as an entity, because we do have some capacity problems there, and equally it addresses the third scourge of youth unemployment in the country. So I think we warm welcome the continued revival of that program of aspirant prosecutors. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John. Thank you very much, Honorable Mola. Honorable Jale.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Minister. And Chairperson, I only have two questions for the minister. I think some of the issues they have covered me, my colleagues, but I just wanted to find out, because I think I wanted to also to emphasize on the issues of the program, on the issues, I meant to say progress on the issues of modernization and digitalization. Because when I was reading some of the presentation that is still coming for the correctional services, I just saw a point which was also talking about the issue of decrease in the allocation on the matters of information technology. And now we are talking about the issue of digitalization and modernization, which is part of that, and there is a decrease on the allocation of funds on that area. So I'm becoming worried as to it's like we are going down, and I would like the minister to comment on that area in terms of the impediments, issues that that we still have within the department that might that hampers progress, speedy progress on this issue. But lastly, Chairperson, I think this one, I didn't hear the minister talking about it, but I wanted the minister, maybe the minister, if he can share information about the letters that you have received about JICS being incorporated to the human rights. If maybe the minister can also, you know, give us information in terms of that, because there is that move, and I saw also the comment of Judge Cameron on that issue. I would like the minister just to give us just a comment on that and his view in terms of that incorporation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Vernahor. Honorable Horn. Honorable Nivo Drachen.
Just a second, Chair. Okay. I tried to spotlight myself, but it's okay. Greetings to everybody, and thank you very much to the Honourable Minister for the overview he's provided. I would like to read it further in more detail, so I'll wait for the copy. I would like, in the meantime, to raise one issue. I try to visit the police services in Riebeek West. So SAPS there has a small courtroom, and then I had the opportunity to view that small courtroom that's next to the station. And the judge goes there every Wednesday, the magistrate. And then once a month on a Monday, there are pensioners. Maintenance issues are discussed. So when the department is considering using virtual or online court services, please could you consider the rural areas as well, where there are these small courtrooms. When we drove there, I realized that the distances are actually quite far. So it's far for the people in the rural areas to travel to these small courtrooms. And they're supposed to be access to justice, but the distances are quite far for the people in the rural areas. So when we consider virtual court proceedings, let us remember the services in the rural areas as well. And yes, in particular, that people have to travel far. The SAP services the communities, and they even use, you know, their limited resources to transport the people to the hospital, to the clinics, drop them at home. And there are already limited resources in the SAPs. So the courts should consider using other methods like virtual proceedings for the rural areas as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Horn. He seems to...
He's in a DA meeting.
he seems not to be connected. Just a few issues, Minister, on my side. One, we would arrange with your office as the committee to discuss with yourselves issues that were raised by the judiciary in our meeting with them. I think it will be important that we have a formal meeting to raise those issues so that we can hear the side of the ministry on the progress that has been made on the issues that were raised by the judiciary. But we will arrange with your office to have that meeting. And then the other issue is the issue which we will also raise it on Friday with the NDPP, is with regard to the if there is any progress with regard to the issue of deputy directors of public prosecutions. We know that there is an ongoing case which was started in the last administration. We have reached a situation where some state advocates are earning more than their superiors, which are the deputy directors of public prosecution. We know that there are budgetary considerations that need to be made, but that matter needs to be brought to finality. we cannot have a situation where superiors or supervisors who also go to court, like the senior state advocates, earn less than the people that they are supervising. When are we bringing that matter to its finality? We know that the NTPP would also be coming on Friday, but we do understand that the matter before court, the ministry was also involved. If we can get a response from your side, Minister. And there was an issue that was raised by both Honorable Jere and Honorable Breitenbach in concerning the integrated justice system. We cannot have a program that will be as old as the department. In fact, it's supposed to be a project. A project has a start date and an end date. We cannot have an integrated justice system that takes more than 15 years and there is no end, because we are likely to have a product by the time it is completed. We are likely to have a product that would, by the time we start, we want to start benefiting from it, we would need to upgrade it. So I think it's important that that program or that project should be finalized. When I was in the Justice Committee before 2008, that project was still ongoing. I'm coming back now. We are not yet done. It's unacceptable. It is really unacceptable. And then if the minister can give us some details on the issue of the state capture. Are we really going to have the 30th of June as the deadline? We understand that there are some budgetary issues and contract issues. If the minister can take us into confidence on those issues. And I remember when we were at the JSC, there was a concern that was raised. I think it would be important if the minister has details, if he can please us, that of late, most of the black council, senior councils and junior councils that started with the commission are no more there. Are there any problems with regard to the state commission and the evidence leaders? If the minister can take us into confidence. Over to you, Minister.
Chairperson, it's Van der Roon speaking.
Are you back from the Free State?
I'm back, Chair. I was chatting away and made some, in my opinion, obviously very valuable inputs, and I didn't realize that it was totally inaudible to the rest of the meeting. But I think it's fixed now. I'll try to be quick, Chair.
Okay.
Yes, and my apologies, obviously, if other colleagues then raised issues I also raised while I was chatting away, I won't realize it. Thank you, Chair. A few questions I wanted to raise regarding DCS. Firstly, the Minister says that in respect of the integrated inmate management system, the system development is nearing completion. Firstly, unfortunately, that's been the message from the department for years on end now. But even if we accept that that is the case, we are also aware as Portfolio Committee that the other issue with the integrated inmate management system is that the department's own information is that it will could technically be rolled out at very limited number of centres due to network coverage and internet capabilities that's not up to standard in more rural areas. And this is one of the issues that is leading to adverse audit findings every year. So I would want to please request that the minister appraise us as to how that issue is going to be addressed. The fact that even if the integrated inmate management system, after we've now spent hundreds of millions of rands on it, are going to be rolled out only in urban centres, how will it assist ultimately in the bigger picture? Then, Chair, regarding DCS, the other issue I wanted to raise is the issue, perennial issue of overcrowding, which of course have a very much an adverse impact on the DCS's ability to rehabilitate offenders. And I would want to request that the minister apprise us as to the status of the build program of DCS. Previously, we were informed that 3 centers will be built in this financial year, Burgersdorp, Parys and Lichtenburg. So if we could be afforded progress as to whether those build programs have started. Then regarding the Department of Justice, Chair, I will just add my voice to those who have questioned the progress regarding the integrated criminal justice system. And limit my questions really to 2 issues. The first being the Master's Office. It's all well and fine, Chair, for letters of appointment in respect of estates and trust authority letters to go online. But the reality is that the biggest challenges faced by the public out there and practitioners who have to interact with the Master's Office is that the delays and the inability of the Master's Office to time in a timely way deal with accounts, liquidation accounts. That's the real issues that's leading to frustrations out there. Even in the past, the 14-day turnaround or target of the Master's Office to issue letters of appointment and trust letters have largely been achieved according to the annual reports. But the biggest challenge is in the middle of the value chain and towards the end of the value chain, when the Master's Office is seemingly unable to deal with inquiries or to deal properly with the assessment of draft accounts that is necessary to finalize estates. And then, Chair, regarding the fight against corruption matter, we take note once again also of the review of legislation, but I want to strongly align myself with your comments and the comments of others and ask the more specific question regarding the State Capture Commission, and that is that at some stage the regulations were amended to allow for, even whilst interim and final reports from the Commission is not available yet, but to allow for the Hawks and the NPA to access whatever is on record at the State Capture Commission. And at the time, we were informed by the Minister that this will speed up prosecution following from the information before the Commission. But yet, as we sit here, very little in respect of that has happened. Why is that the case? And why has there not been made more progress regarding this whole issue? And then, Chair, finally, the last question. The investigative directorate of the NPA is now 2 years into its lifespan. I mean, we've been appraised at various intersections or various instances by both the minister and the investigative directorate that quite possibly there was not a clear appreciation of the magnitude of what it will be faced with going forward. But yet also there, unfortunately, very little has materialized by way of bringing cases before our courts. So I would want to request a feedback as to what is still the challenges faced there. And then secondly, I want to ask the minister whether 2 years in of the 5-year lifespan of this directorate, what is the medium and long-term planning around the feasibility and the longer, possibly a longer lifespan of the directorate, if it is in fact the case that a lot of, I want to say, groundwork to position the directorate to effectively bring cases before our court have been done in the first 2 years, then the question is the remaining 3 years enough for the directorate to make a difference? Thank you, Chair, and thank you for your indulgence.
Thank you very much, Honorable Horn. Honorable Minister and Deputy Ministers.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will also maybe allow that from the delegations, the deputy ministers will also respond, and I think there could be some of very specific and direct questions that may need the NTA themselves to respond, particularly where it deals with with bringing cases to courts. The committee can decide whether they can respond when they come to the committee on their dates, or they can respond now to some of the specific questions. For example, like the one that the Honorable Horn has just asked. What will happen to the learners with regards to the other learners with regards to the integration? The arrangement is that the department is going to integrate the learners in a phased-in approach. Hence, on the 1st of June, they are starting with the number that I've mentioned. But the intention is that this issue will be addressed through the attrition vacancies that are being created from time to time, because the budget challenge that has been created by the budget cuts means that we could not absorb all of them at a go. So the department is planning that they will integrate them on a phased-in approach. And on the 1st of June, upon absorption of the first group, they will then make an assessment and look at the vacancies and the available resource, and then integrate again another number, and again at in a particular period, make another assessment. But the intention is that all the learners will end up being integrated. The only thing we can't do now is to say they will be integrated by this date, all of them, because it will be informed by the process of assessment as it unfolds. But the intention is that we must be able to learn us. With regards to the question, again, the second question on the accompanying budget, on the transfer of the land rights management facility. For the next period of 3 years, it is looked at to be at an amount of around 300 million that will accompany them in terms of the budget to the Legal Aid South Africa. And during this current financial year, it is looked at to be at around 100 million. But this discussion is also happening parallel with the processes with the National Treasury. As you are aware, with the Land Court bill that is currently in before this parliament, and it will come to the committee. So there is that discussion also with the National Treasury, because the bill will also impose additional responsibilities or additional mandate to the Legal Aid South Africa in regards to land management issues. So there's that discussion with the National Treasury that we are also engaging with them to see how we are going to manage this process. And I can confirm to Honorable Swart that indeed this the issue of budget is a process that we are also in discussion with the Department of Rural Development, that it must indeed accompany the transfer. Hence, we have got a team from both Justice and the Department of Rural Development, and also from Legal Aid South Africa. And that is spearheading the implementation of this process. And with regards to the comments at the Commission of Inquiry, the Judicial Service Commission. I think Honorable Swart has spoken as a Member of Parliament, and I leave it to this committee to deal with the matter. What I can say is that some of the members who are here, Honorable Swart, you may find comfort that some of the issues that you are raising were raised during the closed sessions of the commission. Some of the concerns, and they were robustly and vigorously engaged.
And I think Parliament can further find and explore its own way. The with regards to the special commercial crime courts, indeed, Honorable Bredenbach is correct that it must be informed by the cases in the in those available jurisdictions, which already there is a backlog and there are challenges. Hence, the department in this process is not, we are not doing it alone as the Department of Justice. It's a process that involves stakeholders like the NPA and also the judiciary in terms of assessment of the places and the identification of which courts will help us to deal with the backlog across the country. And the current identification that has been agreed upon is that it must be established in Umtata. And the second one, there is still a discussion as to where will it be able to help in terms of the backlog. And that forum is the one that will decide. It's not like the Department of Justice sits alone and say, this is where this court must be established because there is no specialized commercial crimes court. That forum decides that on the basis of this backlog and on the basis of this information and on the basis of the cases that will be dealt with there, this is the best platform or the best place where we can establish this court. With regards to the plans and the fancy plans and not being implemented, indeed we do have challenges, honorable members. And that's why we come here and state that these are the challenges that we're facing in terms of implementation. But we are doing our best to put the best available resources, human resource, to help us with the implementation of these plans that we have put forward, and hence we can report with regards to legal aid, that is movement. We can report with regards to the appointment of the various officials, and we can also report with regards to the issues that relates to the IJS. But indeed, the program is as old as some of us. In the department and in the system, but it's a program that we can be able to state that it is beginning to gain shape, as you will have heard in terms of the dockets and the police stations that have been connected. About 700 have been connected to the system, and also with regards to also the case management system within the courts. What we are currently, the NPA, maybe they will speak more to that, is the issues of change management for prosecutors to be able to also in their numbers use the system in terms of the docket management and also in terms of the case management in the courts. And it is, As I've reported earlier, there has been some kind of movement in terms of the PVA system and also the fingerprint identification program with Home Affairs and the South African Police. So there is movement in terms of that integration. The integrated management system, as the honorable members are raising it, it indeed does have challenges. But as we speak now, there has been almost the development of the second module, which we believe will further enhance its role and its work in the Department of Correctional Service. The connectivity in the rural areas is a challenge that is not only faced by justice and correctional services, it's a countrywide challenge. And there are systems that are being looked into that will enable and help this part of connectivity that will enable the systems to function, which is not an easy issue, particularly given the issues of infrastructure in our rural areas. But the cell phone connectivity is, if there is anything that has enabled our country to bridge that technological divide, is that technology of a cell phone connectivity. And we believe if we're able to do it, we can still be able to find a way in terms of data to bridge that technological divide, to enable the connectivity in the rural courts and also in the rural correctional centers. The decrease on the allocation of the budget in the area of information technology or digitization, indeed, the decrease is not only in this space, it is in all the aspects of the government work. But what we have impressed upon management and everyone is that let's live with what we have. And Honorable Chairperson will know the mantra that I like to invoke during this type of situation, which is in Shangaan, that Vana va munhu va tsemelana enhloko ya njiya. In English, it means that children of the same family, they share the head of a locust. The whole of government, where it is now, we must share the head of a locust. And if we can do it in the whole of government, within the justice family, we have to be able to share the head of a locust. If Legal Aid South Africa, NPA, Correctional Services, the Department of Justice, and everyone can be able to share the head of a locust, we can be able to find value within the resources that we have in terms of information technology, because some of the platforms that we use are the same and they can be shared. So that is what we have to explore to ensure that we are able to achieve the objectives of modernization and of efficiency during this difficult period. With regard to the issue of acting judges and with specific reference to the Western Cape, the question why there were difficulties there. This is, I think it's public information, Honorable Chair. With the acting judges and the other question relating to the criteria of the appointment of acting judges, we are in engagement with the heads of the courts to develop a criteria for the appointment of acting judges. But currently what is being used is the number of experience of a candidate, that the candidate is someone of integrity who has proven himself or herself to be a fit and proper to be appointed an acting judge who, with proven track record and experience and all the requisites that an aspirant judge may have. But we have said with the JPs, there is an engagement for us to develop this kind of a criteria and guidelines which are written, because what I've just said is unwritten convention. It's not written. It's what we have, myself and the JPs, as an understanding that you need to bring me, when you give me an acting judge, someone who is fit and proper, who has got the requisite experience, who has the attributes of integrity and honesty and so forth. So it does from time to time poses challenges, because one of the challenges that it sometimes poses is that for one to be appointed a judge, he or she should have at least the JSC, although it's also not a requirement, should have been clear that at least he has acted for a particular period of time. So when the judge JPs give me same names for more than five terms or for many terms, it creates a problem where I have to raise an issue that it now closes the space for other candidates to be given the same kind of opportunity. So these are the type of engagements that I find myself having with the JPs. And I think this is what could have also caused challenges in the Western Cape recently, including an acting judge who also performed work outside during the period when he was acting. There was some dispute whether indeed he got the permission or not. And we have referred the matter to the JSC and raised the issues even there. The other challenge we have in this space, Chairperson, is the fact that the current judicial establishment, the rationalization process of how many judges and which courts and how, including the magistrates, was almost done almost around 1996, a very long time ago. Society has changed, there's been movement, and the courts work have really significantly increased. And in some of the new courts, like the Mpumalanga and Limpopo, we always have challenges with regards to the reality that the number of judicial officers are not commensurate with the number of the caseload that is there. And this sometimes leads to the JPs wanting to appoint in some of these provinces judges above the established numbers in that court. And this then poses challenges because already the National Treasury has raised challenges with regards to the budget and the national revenue, because the salaries of judges is deducted directly from the national revenue. So if we appoint acting judges additional to the establishment, we are taking directly from the national revenue. So it does pose budgetary challenges. So that is the other challenge that we're currently having. And the department is in the process of engaging the JPs so that we do the rationalization process. And we are in the process to appoint an acting judge, to appoint one of the retired judges. Or if we can't find one of the retired judges, maybe one of the active judges who could help us with the rationalization process as quickly as possible. And also we engage with the National Treasury with regards to the establishment in the judiciary. The issue of JICS being incorporated into the Human Rights Commission, I think maybe this could be, I'm not sure which letters the honorable member is referring to. Maybe they might have been leaked from the discussions that is currently happening between ourselves, JICS, the Department of Public Service and Administration, and the National Treasury. The discussion is to the effect of creating a JICS as a government component in terms of the Constitutional Court decision. So obviously, during that period, there will be different and divergent of views as to how and when can it be best positioned. But at this stage, we are at that level of discussion with everyone, and our view remains that JICS should be a component that has got a unique role to play in terms of protection of the rights of inmates. The issue of the deputy directors of public prosecutions earning more than their superiors, I think this is a government-wide challenge, Honorable Chairperson. It is not only with the NPA, even at Justice, we also have this challenge. We also have it at Correctional Service in terms of the OSD issues. And there is a discussion between the Department of Justice, the NPA, and the National Treasury, and also the Department of Public Service and Administration to find a way to resolve this matter. But it is currently, as you have said, in the Supreme Court of Appeal, and we are awaiting, I hear it's going to be heard soon, and we will await the court judgment, which will further guide and help the process to resolve the matter. In terms of the State Capture Commission of Inquiry, indeed, Chairperson, we will want a situation where there is finality of the work of the Commission of Inquiry. We have already spent a lot of money, so we cannot abruptly end the commission's work. The commission has to end by giving us a report that the president must consider, and the cabinet and the whole government of South Africa in terms of its implementation. So the Department of Justice, the Commission of Inquiry, Secretariat, and the National Treasurer, they continue to have engagement in terms of to help the Commission to finalize its work. And I can confirm, Chairperson, that we found an amount of 75 million with the National Treasurer. We find each other to find 75 million to help the Commission to towards the finalization of its work. We obviously, as to whether by the end of June, the 30th of June, the Commission will have finished its work. This is in accordance with the court order that they must have finished their work. But it is also in the hands of the chairperson of the Commission of Inquiry to ensure that it is so. And if there are difficulties, maybe he might raise at a certain point in time what could have been the difficulties for them to finish. Ourselves also as a department, we will want to see the Commission finish its work, because it also affects our programs, because some of the money that we might have to find to help the Commission, we have to cut from some of our programs. So we are beginning to feel the squeeze of the resources that they have to be taken to help the Commission. So it's important that it must finish its work, but hence we continue to engage with them. And if there could be challenges, we will hear from the Secretariat and the Chair if there will be challenges for them to finish by that date. So I will request the Chair that we allow also both DM Holomisa and Jeffrey to respond to some of the issues, and if the DG of Justice or Commissioner also want to add something, and also the NPA with regards to specific questions that relate to cases, if the chairperson wants them to answer today or when they come to the committee on their own. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. DM John Jeffrey.
Thanks very much, Chair. I think the Minister's covered a lot, so maybe just to add. On the issue of BRICS, which is not my area, but just to say that I don't know if the issues come about because the Human Rights Commission are responsible for the monitoring mechanism in terms of the optimal protocol for the Convention Against Torture, whereby a body has to be established to monitor places where people are detained involuntarily. That would include correctional facilities, police cells, people committed into hospital wards, that kind of thing. And they are the coordinating body for that, and they are one of the bodies working with them. So it's not as part of them, but working with them under that structure. Is JIC. So I don't know if it's if that is where the issue's coming from. Then just to Honourable Nivot Drushan on the issue of accessibility and using electronic devices or means. The Criminal Procedure Act currently allows for evidence to be led electronically. That's an old provision. There isn't anything like that in other legislation for civil matters. And at the moment, the courts are using the minister's disaster directions to do a lot of things electronically that they wouldn't have been able to do in the past. So for example, I was in Kimberley. The chief magistrate was telling me that he was running children's court matter from Kimberley, and the child in question was in some small town village many kilometers away. There was an advocate in Joburg, and it all seemed to work quite well. We are bringing in legislation to ensure that can continue even after the state of disaster. Then just on the issue of the commercial crimes courts, as the minister said, there's a committee dealing with the issue, but maybe just to say that the regional court presidents play quite a role because they are very eager for more commercial crimes courts. These are courts at a regional court level. So although technically it was meant to be three courts established, and that was in Limpopo, Northwest, Mahikeng, and Northern Cape in Kimberley, the regional court president in Limpopo managed to squeeze out an additional two courts. So you've in fact got two courts in Polokwane and one in Giane. The Umtata Commercial Crimes Court, which in theory was meant to come later, is functional. It has been functional since last month, I think, or the month before that. And then there's one at East London, which is also functional. Those are largely manned by acting magistrates. But I think it's maybe something we can bring more information on, but all those courts have extremely full roles as far as I understand. The Umtata Court dealt with quite recently the charges against some people who'd worked for the state attorney's office in Umtata in terms of dealing with their bail application, and that matter is going there. So, Chair, I just wanted to add those points. Thanks. Oh, maybe just to say, I didn't see anyone from the NPA on the platform. I mean, remember that the department and the NPA are coming on Friday, but obviously just to Honourable Horn's questions, the executive is not involved in the prosecution of people. So those questions would really have to, I think, go to the NPA. Thanks, Chair.
Yes, the NPA is here. I'm not sure whether Honourable Deputy Minister would want to say something. Welcome, NDPP.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members.
Thank you. No, we will come back to you after the Deputy Ministers have answered. You look much younger today.
I am much younger today, Chair.
Thank you very much, Abedin. I thought you were referring to me when you said you look much younger.
and you too.
No, Abedin, honourable members, I don't think there's much that I could add except to emphasize the need for us to make sure that indeed the learners that we trained at our own expense as a department, the learners that to whom we gave to understand that they would absorb in the department, that they are somehow absorbed because they did rely for a number of factors on them getting to be part and parcel of the department when they were given the training. And all I would say to urge all of us to make sure that these people are not left as destitute as they are likely to be if they are not absorbed. Of course, also, it's important, as the Honorable Ngola said, that the DCS management must communicate properly with the learners that we train so that their expectations are in line with what is likely to happen. Also, the need for the expedite, for us to expedite the setting up and implementation of the self-sufficiency and self-sustainability model that must be expedited as much as far as practically possible to ensure that indeed we use the resources, the human resources that we have that are currently being fed and closed at the expense of the state, having done what they did to the members of the public, that they must plow back by way of producing the things that they need, be it food or be it clothing. So So we would, as we will ensure then that we do what we can as a department and ministry to ensure that that happens. I think regarding the build program, the status of the build program and the facilities that we are planning to build in the course of this year, I think that information can be further elaborated upon by the National Commissioner and or the acting COC who are present in this meeting. Regarding the matter of Jigs Mouted to be part of the Human Rights Commission, I think fortunately Justice Cameron is here. He is prepared to give whatever explanation that is required so that there's clarity as to what exactly is happening there. I know the minister did say that it's something, of course, that is likely to be debated. It's an idea emanating from somewhere within government, but the justice is in a position here to shed more light on especially how the letter came to be in the position of the Portfolio Committee while the matter was still handled at the level that it was. But I just spoken to the judge and he's prepared to give whatever explanation is required to shed light. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. I see the hand of Honorable Gellis Breitenbach. Do you want to, is it a follow-up or what, Honorable Breitenbach? Oh, okay. I think it's an old hand.
No, it's not an old person,
yes.
Hey, Wena, you just be careful. I know where you live. it's not an old hand. I wanted to remind the minister to answer my question, please, about Mrs. Rousseau's suspension and disciplinary.
Okay. And Minister, also the issue that I raised about issues that were raised at the JSC about evidence leaders at the state capture inquiry. Over to you, Minister, or anybody you delegate to answer those questions.
If you could allow the, firstly, the NDPP chairperson on those specific cases that they've been asked, if, and also the DG will answer the question related to the suspension of the or the disciplinary hearing of the CFO. Then I will respond to the others.
Thank you very much, Minister. NDPP.
Thank you, Chair. We are in your hands, Chair. We, as you know, we are there on Friday. But with your permission, Chair, I can perhaps deal with the question that was raised by Honorable Horn about the impact of the amendment to the regulations of the Commission. Chair, what I can say is that the amendments have, in fact, yielded good results in the sense of it's there's certainly a lot more better communication, and we are sending requests to the Commission for information. They have been providing information and the collaboration has been working very well. There are certain challenges, however, with regard to, for example, timing and sequencing of, you know, this, the commission is still functioning, so they are still presenting evidence, and so there's some, I wouldn't call it challenges, but there needs to be very close coordination between us and the commission in terms of the timing of when they actually hand over certain information that we have been requested. In addition to that, you know, Honorable Horn has said, you know, the, you know, this should facilitate, you know, cases coming to court quicker. I just want to again remind the committee and honorable members that, you know, we are receiving information and evidence from the commission. A lot of it comprises vast data, cell phone evidence, bank records, and the volumes are immense. And it requires us to analyze that and to really
you know, sift through all of that evidence, and also, you know, presenting in before the commission, we have to, the investigators have to verify the information that we receive. As we know, there's no cross-examination, well, limited cross-examination before the commission. And so as the investigators, we have to anticipate those things. And there's a lot of more work that actually needs to go into the investigation after we receive evidence from the commission. But there's been a lot of progress also. We must remember that the commission is still functioning, and a lot of the capacity and capabilities, in as much as there is a plan to migrate the capacities and capabilities to the NPA, the Investigating Directorate, and there's progress in terms of implementing that plan. But the fact that the commission is still working, it means that many of the skills that we need relating to people, resources, and the capability is being affected in terms of the continued work of the commission. So there cannot be a complete transfer or migration of all of these capacities and capabilities whilst the commission is still working. But that said, I want to say that, you know, hopefully, you know, the commission will conclude its work sooner rather than later. But there's a lot of progress. The regulations, change the regulations has made a big impact. But those are some of the issues that still need to be dealt with. But we're in a much better place than we were prior to the regulations. And let's just say that there's a lot of improvements and things are looking up. Thank you very much, Chair. There was the other issue of the deputy directors. If we can deal with that on Friday, Chair, that will be in order. I'm not sure if there was anything else that was specifically, if there's anything else, we can deal with it on Friday, Chair, if that's in order. Thank you.
Thank you very much. DJ? DJ Justice?
Yes, thanks, Chair. Chair, thank you very much. With regard to the case of the suspended CFO, Ms. Rousseau, and the Chief Director of Supply Chain, Mr. Singh, we had hoped that their matters would have been finalized by the end of April, but there have been delays due to their representative being booked off for COVID-related sicknesses. So the whole of April, they requested a postponement. And before that, there was a change of representative as well. So the new representative requested time to go through the files to familiarize himself with the matter. Now, the matter is set down for the 17th of May. And we have impressed on the representatives of the department that we would like to have this matter concluded in the next 30 days. So we hope that by mid-June, the case will have been finalized. And we have really appealed that all measures be put in place to make sure that where possible, they even proceed virtually. Because indeed it has been sometimes, but it has not been owing to the fault of the department. The representatives as well of the employees have been raising a lot of issues that some of them were not necessarily relevant to the case, but they contributed a great deal to the delay of the case. We as a department are really very much interested in the finalization of the matter, because we are affected in terms of capacity in the area of finance and supply chain. So we really hope that with the possibility of the 30 days from the 17th, that the matter will be concluded, because the employer has almost concluded the case on our part. So it's mainly the employees who have to finalize their case. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Chair, if I may, there was one through you, Chair, with your indulgence. There was one other issue that I think it might be perhaps best dealt with whilst the Minister is present as well today. And that was also the question relating to the ID and the remaining 3 years, given that, as we know, the ID is not a permanent capability. Chair, as you know, that the National Anti-Corruption Strategy has been adopted. And there is a process there for the creation of a single entity to deal with corruption. Whilst that process is on, it is clear that the investigating directorate, as you correctly said, Chair, albeit temporary, is in fact setting the foundation for any permanent entity that will deal with corruption. So the temporary nature of the investigating director has been a challenge in terms of capacitating it, because you capacitating a temporary entity is very challenging in terms of it's not permanent, so you don't want to overspend. But we see the ID as you said, as setting the groundwork for any permanent entity. And so the question to answer very specifically, certainly 3 years is not going to be enough to deal with all the corruption case and the value and the volume of cases that the entity has to deal with. So we are proceeding on the basis that the ID will be capacitated to in fact be the entry point, let's put it that way, into the permanent capacity to deal with corruption moving beyond the 5 years of the ID. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, NGPP. Minister, the question relating to the state capture and the evidence leaders, the one that was raised sharply in the JSC.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. I will respond to that one, Chairperson, but the DM had requested that we allow the inspecting judge, Edwin Cameron, to enlighten the committee also on that issue that he had asked about about JIC's component and the discussion we're having with the Department of Public Service and also the National Treasury. And also the National Commissioner should also come in, Chairperson, on the build program that Honorable Horn has asked about how far are we and what is happening. I can state that we do have challenges, but there is some work that is happening, which I think the National Commissioner can enlighten the committee a bit about where we are, particularly on those specific questions he has asked. No. Then I will respond to the outstanding questions, Chairperson, at the end when they've responded, including your question.
Okay. Now, Minister, the only challenge is that immediately after you are done with you, it will be the National Commissioner and the Inspecting Judge. So they are presenting. So they will have enough time to present in detail on all of these issues. I think in the next 5 minutes or so. So we just thought that it will be important just for you to just to conclude so that you can swiftly conclude.
Okay. No, in that case, then that's fine, Chairperson. We are in your hands. With regards to the Beggars Fort and Lichberg project have been finalized and ongoing out on tender via the public works. It was delayed due to COVID-19. Paris is under construction at 80% completion to be finalized in the next financial year. The refurbishment of the Mtun Jane Youth Center is already underway to be completed in this financial year. And the refurbishment of Brandfley has been completed and handed over to the department. Honorable Bredenbach also asked how many dockets have been uploaded through the IJS hub. It's 2,674,445 up to so far. And with regards to your question, Chairperson, the Commission of Inquiry's its work of evidence leaders continues, and it was expected that it will have been done at a certain particular point. And some of the advocates and the senior black councils had expected that it will be finalized so that they are able to go back to some of their practices. And when there was extension, it also affected their practices work and some. So there is a variety of reasons why some ended up leaving and others came in. We still have a sizable number of them who are still there, but they are also leaving from time to time. It's affected by the fact that it also affects their practices when they are permanently at the Commission of Inquiry. So the question becomes, why will the white counterparts still be able to be there? We could not really establish exactly, but in an informal discussion with the advocate Pretoria with the commission, he stated that it has also affected his practice, but as an evidence leader, it will be impossible for him to leave. He did say that this work has killed his practice. So I think there are variety of challenges that led to some going and to some coming in. We will further probe to see whether anything could still be done to ensure that whoever continues to do their job there, it is a reflection of the demographics of our country. And lastly, with regards to the comment or the question of Honorable Ngola with regards to the self-sustainability model, Chairperson, indeed, this is a revolution, Chairperson. And I think if there is anything that this committee will want to pin its hands on, should be the issue of the self-sustainability model. And we welcome this, that it might look into a discussion with us in terms of this matter. I know that from the various members of this committee, in particular, Honorable Member Jim Selfie, has been also very passionate about this matter. So we will be glad to get more guidance even from this committee in terms of it. But we also have to ensure that it becomes sustainable. And the DCS, the inmates, they are able to work, gain skills. And in that regard, it will also help the country to see that the inmates are paying back for their work, which they are currently doing. But the self-sustainability model will ensure that they do more. So thank you, Chairperson, for this opportunity for us to engage with the committee.
Thank you very much, Minister. Thank you for honoring this invitation, and thank you to the deputy ministers. I think we will keep in touch. We will follow up on this self-sustainability model. I know that the Department of Correctional Services produces very good quality in many respects, including high quality furniture and office furniture. I think these are some of the models that can be built to be, some of them end up being SMMEs. We might even have an SOC arising from there. So it's one area that we think that it can be a game changer in terms of sustainability and end up creating employment for the broader society. Thank you very much, Minister, Deputy Ministers, for your attendance, and to the members of the NPA. We will see you on Friday. We have allowed the whole day to be given to the NPA because there has been a lot of complaint, especially from the MDPP responsible for prosecution, that we want to cut him when he's still speaking. So we've given him all the time so that he can answer all the questions. So even if we end up at 6, so we'll have given enough time to the NPA. Thank you very much. As the minister and the delegation are leaving, can I welcome the deputy minister again of correctional services, Nkosi Phathekile Olomisa, the judge Cameron, and the national commissioner and the team to the meeting, the second part of our meeting. Welcome and goodbye to the others. Deputy Minister.
Chairperson, good morning again, and thank you very much for welcoming us. I think without much ado, I will hand over to Justice Cameron and also the National Commissioner to make the presentations. I will get involved later in the course of our discussion. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Judge Cameron.
Good morning, Chairperson. And good morning to your members, and good morning also to the National Commissioner and to the Deputy Ministers, and if the Minister is still online, to him as well. Chairperson, may I say at the outset that we at JICS really welcome this opportunity. I hope that I'm not cutting in front of National Commissioner Fraser, who is allowing us to proceed. I'm grateful for it personally to be able to do this, since I have a medical appointment after 12 o'clock. So I'm gratefully taking the chance that your order ruling has provided. Minister, when I say that we appreciate the committee's oversight, I mean that really. You have my, you and the Deputy Chair, Mr. Richard Kopadile Janti, have my cell phone numbers. They are used by your members, including Mr. James Self MP and Ms. Glynis Breitenbach MP, for getting direct complaints and requests to me. And the Deputy Minister and I interact frequently about those complaints, and I wish to assure other members that they're also welcome to contact me directly at any time. Chairperson, may I just say that with regard to our interaction with the Deputy Minister, Nkosi Patakile Holomisa, that we are most grateful to him for co-chairing with me last week a most unusual meeting with the National Commissioner's support, with the National Commissioner's senior health executives, and we had there the Stop TB and SA partners together with the American Centers for Disease Control. And we believe that that meeting made a breakthrough in health bringing and health encouraging initiatives in the department. And that is a further instance of the kind of cooperation which we wish to foster at JICS. Chairperson, I want to clarify the issue of Minister Mboweni's letter. It was not leaked. I will contact the minister and let him know that. The Deputy Minister, Holomisa, already knows that. We sent the letter to you, and I think rightfully so, together with our response to it, Chairperson. And I might say that in my first appearance before your committee, I was given a scrubbing around the ears by Mr. Janti for only informing the Minister of events regarding the JICS bill. And he insisted, in my view, rightly, that the Portfolio Committee should also be informed. So I welcome Minister Lamola's allusion to the fact that different and divergent views will arise in the debate about the particular shape that JICS must take in the light of the Constitutional Court judgment affirming the necessity, the constitutional necessity for JICS to be autonomous and to have sufficient independence. Minister Mboweni took the view that because human rights are indivisible, as he rightly said in his letter, therefore there should be a single institutional home for human rights, and we respectfully endorse and support the view of the minister that there is a distinctive institutional necessity for a prison's watchdog like JICS is to have its own institutional form. But as both Deputy Minister John Jeffrey from Justice and the Minister have indicated, I think the department's view remains that JICS should be an autonomous component. Chairperson, I'm going to steal another 30 seconds of the time, and then I'm going to ask our CEO, Mr. Vic Misser, to do our presentation on our annual performance plan and budget. But I'm going to steal just 30 seconds more to say that we have received from the National Commissioner a most informative and expansive briefing on the parole system, which has been JICS's concern and the public's concern. We seek to assist the department in creating a parole system that rightly releases the right offenders who have earned their parole, but who keeps inside all those parole applicants who endanger all of us. And then further, we are engaging with the National Commissioner and his senior executives on facilities maintenance and upgrade. And lastly, Chairperson, we are still seeking appropriate accommodation, and we may not leak but provide to the committee appropriate letters concerning that quest as well. Chairperson, I would welcome any questions from members or from the deputy ministers, but subject to that and to my very respectful request that I be excused soon after 12 o'clock, which is in about 40 minutes time, I would ask your permission to hand over to our CEO, Mr. Vic Missa, to provide a handful of slides, 5 or 6, to brief the committee on the specific aspects indicated. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Judge. Members, firstly, we allowed the judge to come immediately after the deputy minister because of the request to go and see the doctor. I would ask the commissioner to bear with us. If we can just allow the CEO to present, and maybe between this time and 12, if members would want to ask the judge and the CEO questions, then thereafter we can go to the commissioner. Will that be fine, members?
Yes, Chair, agreed.
Thank you very much. Are you fine, commissioner?
Absolutely, Chair, under your leadership, absolutely.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. CEO?
Good morning, Honourable Chair. Good morning, colleagues. Good morning, Honourable Members, Deputy Minister, National Commissioner, and other colleagues on the virtual platform. We have prepared presentations and slides. I'm not sure if the Secretariat is going to flight them for us, or do you want me to flight them? I would then request permission to do so.
Secretariat?
Good morning. You already have permission to fly, Mr. and Mrs. Sefiel. But can we be sent the presentation so that we can send it to members? We didn't receive it.
Okay, I will share it as I did send it last night, but it seems as if you didn't receive it, but I will share it with you.
Yes, it's not really acceptable that you send it last night. We expect the presentation should be sent sometime so that we can have time to go through them. If you send it last night, it is difficult for members to prepare thoroughly.
Sorry for that, Mr. Chair, but there were some technical challenges.
May I take responsibility for that? I was waiting for the presentation to overview it on my Gmail account, and we had difficulty receiving it, and I take full responsibility. I received it around about 5 o'clock yesterday, and I really do most humbly apologize to the members for that glitch on my side, which rightly you are unhappy about. I thought it had reached the committee in time to be circulated. It's my responsibility, and I apologize to the committee and to you too.
Thank you very much, Judge. Proceed, CEO.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, Honourable Members. So I think the most important aspect of GICS is that we only have one indicator within DCF. And if one moves quickly to slide 4, which is on the screen now, you will see that on that slide, let's go back. Yeah, you'd find that on the previous 2018-2019 performance cycle, we have attained 136 inspections out of 240 centers. The actual achievements in 2019-2020, which is already captured in our annual report, was 131 out of 243. We were 5 short there because of the COVID pandemic, which our ultimate achievement was 53.9%. In our current cycle, which is our 2020-2021, which has just concluded now, we have in fact achieved the entire target of 136 inspections as indicated, which has been achieved. The current cycle, which is the 2020-2021, as you can see, there were 21 at Limpopo, 18 in the Gauteng province, 27 that was achieved in the Northern Cape Free State province, 23 in the Eastern Cape, 24 in the Western Cape, 23 in the KZN, which totaled to 136 inspections for that performance cycle. The national inspection plan for the current performance cycle, as you would see on slide 27, we have actually allocated 27 for the central management region, which covers the Free State, Northern Cape, Northwest provinces. In the northern management region, which covers Gauteng, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga provinces, 28 has been allocated for that performance cycle. In KZN 27, Western Cape 27, and Eastern Cape 27, and we are still retaining our targets of 136 inspections for the performance cycle. So these are broken down into various quarters, but as you can see, despite the COVID-19 pandemic, JIGS managed to conduct all those inspections scheduled for the performance cycle, which is the 136 over the performance cycle. But there is still an issue with the severity of shortage of staff. Mr. Chair, I must indicate that JIGS employs only 8 inspectors to conduct these 136 inspections over 5 regions. It is a huge challenge. In fact, if you one calculates the 8 inspectors actually equates to 17 inspections over the performance cycle, despite the fact that we have also conducted what we would call 64 investigations during this performance cycle. This is captured on slide 9, as you see presented now. But if one goes into the DCS APP quarterly targets accumulative, you would find that in quarter one, we have actually allocated 37 inspections, which equates to 50%. And as we move to quarter two, you'll find that it incrementally moves up to 30%, 40% in quarter three, and 56% in quarter four, totaling the 156 inspections. This is captured in slide 10. This is further broken down into quarter one, two, three, and four, giving you a total of 136 inspections as alluded to. Our budgets quickly, Mr. Chair, due to the fiscal constraints as already alluded to by our Honorable Minister, JIG's current allocation is 76,140,000. It's broken down into compensation of employees at 63 million, goods and services at 11 million, and transfers and subsidy 16,000, payments of capital assets 977, just quarter of a million, and the total total budget allocation is 76,140,000. To give you a comparison of the budgets, Mr. Chair and Honorable Members, one can notice that the 2020-20 performance, 2020-21 performance cycle, the total allocation was 71,521,000 initially, but due to government's reprioritization of funding and budget cuts, our budget was then adjusted to what we would call on the compensation budget down to 64,420,000. So one can notice that from the 2020-2021 to the 2020-2021 adjusted budget, which was 81,493,000, it was subsequently adjusted to 74,454,500 rands. Our current budget, Mr. Chair, Honourable Members and colleagues on the platform, is that our 2020-2021 budget is currently sitting at, as already indicated, 76,140,000, which is actually an overall increase from the previous 74 million by 1,687,500 rands. If one looks at the readjusted budget in the 2020-2021 cycle because of government reprioritization of its projects, you would find that a reduction of 7 million has occurred during that period. During the current performance budget, there is a reduction in what we would call the compensation budget of JIGS. As you're aware, Mr. Chair, JIGS has a total performance of a staff complement of only 86 staff, of which an addition of approximately 200 are contract employees that performs the ICCB duties at our respective stations in the correctional environment. So there's been a reduction of almost 1,180,000 on our compensation budget, which has a huge impact on filling of some of our positions. There has been an increase by almost 4 million on goods and services, but I guess we can deal with the reprioritization and adjustment of budgets as we move along during the midterm, around about September, October. Mr. Chair, I think this is my presentation to you and the honorable members. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, CEO. Can you remove the slide? Okay, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Honorable members, do you want to interact with the presentation made by the judge and by the CEO? Honorable Ganji.
Thank you very much, Chair. I just want to, and thank you to Judge Cameron and the CEO for the presentation. Having listened to the minister with his overview issues and being eager to listen to JIGS and DCS now and the Department of Justice and the others coming on Friday, I just have a three set of questions, Chairperson. A three set of questions that I want to deposit now to JIGS, but I want the same three set of questions for the Department of Correctional Services, the Commissioner, and Department of Justice to listen and write them down, because the same set of questions will be applicable to all of them. And I'd really want them to take note, just three simple questions. And so I think I want the judge to start assisting in answering those before he leaves. And the three questions, Chair, are, because remember the annual performance plans, they are coming in front of us with a proposition. They are proposing to us what they want to do. And so, the onus is on them to really convince us about the kind of things that they are putting in front of us. So my first question, Chair, in response to their proposal, this APP, I just want to know what in this annual performance plan of JIGS and the others that are going to come that they are presenting here for them to tell us what is it that represents, Chair, a forward leap. What represents a forward leap or improvement on the weaknesses of the previous plans? I want an answer to that very simple question. I've gone through all of the slides except the JIGS one which you received, you were told you were sent late last night, all others. There's a lot of things being said, but I'm interested to know one thing as a first question. What in this APP that you are presenting represent a forward leap or an improvement on the weaknesses of the previous plans? Or are we just repeating what we have had before? That's my first question, Chair. The second question to JIGS and then to the Commissioner and others who are going to have to think about it properly is, what are you losing? What are you foregoing in this APP as a result of the following? It could be as an impact of the COVID or a failure to spend on your part. What in this annual plan you are foregoing because of those two factors? Impact of COVID or a failure to spend or execute your previous plans? That's my second question, Chair. My third question, you've heard the minister here making a bold statement, Chairperson, saying, and I quote him, implementation and hard work is what counts. This is what the minister said in his overview. If you had listened to him, he's made that bold statement. Then everything else, the beautiful plans that are being presented here. And my question in relation to that, I want to know from JIGS the Department of Justice and the, and DCS, what are the capacity risks that are likely to stall this implementation? I want them to tell us, having put this plan in front of us, before they leave, they must be able to share with us what have they identified as the capacity risk that are going to install this, because having gone through their strategic plan and APPs, I certainly have identified those risks, but I don't see in their presentation them helping us on that. These are the only three questions, Chair, I want to ask from today until Friday when we're done with all of these institutions. So others have got a better time to prepare and answer those. That's it, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Janji. Honorable Breitenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First thing I want to say is a comment. I'm delighted to see that that Justice Cameron is well, and I hope he's on the road to recovery. And I really do think that we need to look as a committee very seriously into this issue of JICS becoming an independent institution. I see only plus points if it does, and I see serious problems if it is allowed to merge with something like the Human Rights Commission. The Human Rights Commission, in my view, is a dismal failure, but it's dismal. And JICS has every opportunity to be a great success, and it's an essential institution. And I think if we seriously, as a constitutional democracy with 26 years in, want to eventually be judged by how we treat the poorest members of our society, our community, including those that we imprison, then we need to do everything we can to make sure that JICS is as efficient and as functional as possible. Because I'm sure that all the committee members will agree with me, our prisons are dismal. Our prisons are a blight on our democracy. Our prisons are, at the moment, a failure. And we need to find ways of making that better, and I believe JICS can play a very, very big an important role in this. So we please need to look at that very seriously. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Judge, we are not aware that you are not well. We are happy that you have recovered. We wish you a further speedy recovery. Thank you very much. Honorable Jagger.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to ask one question. I think it's... But I want to ask it in another way, in saying, okay, I'll just simplify it. In terms of these inspections, because today, indeed, we're talking numbers, how many inspections that they have done and all that. But I wanted to find out from the team, as to Chairperson, the impact of these inspections when it comes to progress and the changes that we envisaged when it comes to the treatment and the life of the inmates as JICS is mandated, Chairperson. But the last one is about, I just want to find out from them also as to, are we, I want to put it, but in a way of saying the treatment of the inmates, their rights vis-a-vis the rights of the officials. Because when you hear the stories, we also have the officials that have been, I'm not sure if maybe for lack of better words, I would say the abuse that is directed to the officials by the inmates, in terms of you hear that the officials have been stabbed and all those things. What is the view of the team in terms of giving us the status in terms of the balancing the rights of the two groups within our facilities. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mola.
Thank you very much, Chair. Yes, indeed, Chair. In the discovery to Judge Justice Cameron. Chair, my issue is one, and I think it's very basic. It is common cause, Chair, that all our correctional facilities are experiencing challenges, which may require the attention of JICS. When we listen into the previous financial years, they have reached 136 visits out of 243. But the major question I would like to ask with regard to that, Chair, is when they set up a target of 243 visits to correctional services per that financial year, they compare it against how many correctional facilities. If we say, Chair, if I make it a simple example, we're going to make visits announced and unannounced in 243 correctional centers. How many correctional centers do we have? I will have to test the 243 visits with the number of correctional facilities do we have in the country. For example, say if you speak about the 2021-2022 plan, the target is in Cape Town 27. How many correctional centers in the Eastern Cape? So we are able to check that if JICS is able to cover a vast majority of work they are supposed to do in a particular financial year. If not, Chair, what are then the major problems? Should it be the capacity within JICS? Should it be budget-related problems that may have caused them not to cover a lot of spectrum in terms of visiting these correctional facilities? The last of which would be, if we say, for example, out of 150 correctional centers in the Eastern Cape, our visits are going to go to 27 of them.
Honorable Mona?
This particular financial year. What
Honorable
are the key look in to look for in correctional? Yes.
Honorable Mona? Yes, can you move away from that tree?
Imani app, don't know the man last catch.
Yes.
Thank you. No, I was saying, for example, the target is to visit 27 correctional centers in the Eastern Cape in the year 2021-2022. Now I'm saying, if our target is 27 out of, for example, 200 correctional centers, what particular factors do we look for in a correctional center that qualifies it to be amongst those JICS wishes to visit for investigation? I'm not sure, Chair, if this tree is not...
No, it's perfect now.
Okay, no, so that was my last question, Chair, because if we all agree that we, in our correctional centers, we experiencing major overcrowding, blah, 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 blah. It is common cause that there are possible violations of human rights and some of the things, some matters are related to hygiene, blah, 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 blah. So it is ideal that DICS must cover at least a serious range of our centers in terms of their visits. But then the issue would be, what then timbers with their capacity to do that? Are they budgetary related? Is it human resource related capacity internally, blah, blah, blah? So just that brief briefing.
Thanks. It's a long brief. Thank you very much. Over to you, Judge Cameron, and to the CEO.
Many thanks indeed, Chairperson. May I start by just making a plea to the Honourable Ms. Breitenbach and the committee? I think that we sensed that the Honourable Minister was taken by surprise that the committee had got the letter, and I've taken responsibility for sending it to the committee, I think rightly so, together with our response. But the Honourable Minister has indicated that this is part of a debate. He's also staked out his provisional position, and as has Deputy Minister John Jeffrey. So may I ask the committee, even though we've provided the committee with the material of the debate, which is Finance Minister Mboweni's letter and our response, that we put a bracket around this for the moment, if Ms. Breitenbach is content. We are fighting this issue, and we, without endorsing Honourable Ms. Breitenbach's disparagement of the SAHRC, we believe that there are persuasive internationally recognised reasons for JICS to remain an autonomous institution. And on that score, I'm grateful to Ms. Breitenbach for endorsement. Secondly, Chairperson, may I say that I don't welcome your deputy's questions at all. They are uncomfortable and sticky questions, and they're not nice to have to deal with. But I'm going to give my CEO a chance in a moment. But what I do want to say, two things, is that by reason of a glitch in the lockdown regulations last March, JICS personnel were not exempted as emergency personnel. We immediately raised this. We had the support of Minister Lamola, we had the support of our Deputy Minister, and we had the support of National Commissioner Fraser. But it took 10 weeks for JICS personnel to be exempted. So we lost 10 weeks from about the 20th of March until the June regulations were amended before we could resume. So that's a partial answer to your deputy, and who also chairs the subcommittee on corrections. So we did lose, and when we say what represents a leap forward or an improvement, may I say that without being smug, we are really proud, Chairperson, of our investigators, our executive staff, and our Independent Correctional Centre visitors for recovering from the setback and for persisting and going back into correctional centres for the reasons that your committee has indicated. The second point I want to make in relation to Deputy Chair and Chair of Subcommittee Jiangxi's questions are that what capacity risks? Well, we know what capacity risks. We've been given a whack in our budget adjustment. This is something that the National Commissioner knows. We've objected to it. We've been debating it with his budgetary officials. And we run a significant risk of something like 7 million. Our CEO will give you the exact figure. And that puts at risk most of the JICS budget. It's a tightly run. And here I'm parasiting again on the praise from, the implied praise from your member, Honourable Ms. Breitenbach. JICS is very tightly run. There's no budgetary fat. And most of our budget goes on personnel costs, which is the 240 to get to to Mr. Mola's question. Most of them go on the independent center visitors. So we are at risk if our budget is cut in that way. I want to turn to the Honorable Ms. Maseko Jele. And I want to say this, I'm glad you raised this issue, because I personally, and as Inspecting Judge of Correctional Services, have never, ever taken a stand against correctional officials. They have a tough job. Why do they have a tough job? Your predecessor, Chairperson Magwanishe, Mr. Johnny De Lange, I blame him. He created the minimum sentence structures 24 years ago, which are still an evil. I know that Ms. Breitenbach and her fellow members don't agree with me. I think minimum sentences are an evil. I think compulsory life sentences are an evil. We have jammed our jails. Allow me on my soapbox, Chair, just for another moment. We had 400 persons serving life sentences in 1994. We now have 16,800. That is let me not overstate it. It's also a blot on our democracy. And we have jammed our jails. And then we ask Ms. Maseko Jele, rightly, we ask correctional personnel and National Commissioner Fraser to deal with the calamity we've created by overcrowding our prisons. I want to give you an instance this week, Honorable Ms. Maseko Jele. We had an instance of a prisoner who was segregated, and it came to me as an appeal. It might have come through one of your members as well, but we dealt with it immediately. We were informed by the corrections officials that the prisoner in question had called a correctional official by the K word. And I looked at the statute. The statute says that, and then he was placed in segregation, which in layperson's language is solitary confinement. I looked at the statute. The statute says that for serious offenses, you can use segregation. And my determination in the light of Chief Justice Mogoeng's judgment in the SARS versus CCMA judgment of 2016 was that the use of the K word cross-racially against someone who's black in the correctional setting, whether by an official or an inmate, is a serious offense for the purposes of the statute. So I hope that answers the questions. I haven't answered all of them. I'm going to very respectfully beg to be excused at this point for my medical and leave it in the hands of the CEO. And I'm most grateful to you. May I just add one thing very, very quickly? Deputy Minister Atikile Holomisa takes credit for my recovery. When he heard I was in hospital, he sent me a message saying, I instruct you to get better. I got better. I beat this thing, and I now demand that you do the same. So I give him full credit for my recovery. Thank you, sir. Thank you, members.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Judge. We still need you. And so the whole committee is behind your speedy recovery and South Africans at large. So we would wish you a speedy recovery. We will phone you to check how are you doing and expect our call very soon. Thank you very much, CEO.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Honorable Members. Quickly, I'm not going to try and repeat what the judge had said because I don't want to bore the members. But I think what comes through very strongly with the Deputy Chair's questions on the leap forward, the forward leap. Now, Chair, you recall 2-3 years ago, Jigs was performing 81 inspections over a performance cycle. 81 was the target, which equated to 33%. Since that move in the last 3 years, what we equate, what we call a leap forward, we've now moved this incrementally to what we would call the stretched belt of Jigs to 136 inspections over a performance cycle, which actually equates to almost 57%, which breaks the back of half of centers being inspected over a performance cycle. Now, Mr. Chair, this ties up with the question of Honorable Member Jele with how do we identify which centers to be visited, and also Honorable Member Tola. So, Honorable Chair, this is how it's done. We rotate these cycles, and we ensure that every center is inspected over a period of 12 months. But because of the limited resources that we have, we ensure that centers are always scheduled in terms of our national inspection plan, which is already presented and submitted to our esteemed portfolio for consideration annually. This has already been distributed to you, Mr. Honorable Chair, and it's already in your possession. What we built in is what we would call ratings of the centers now. And here you would find we're using the three level ratings, good, satisfactory, and unsatisfactory. And we use what we would call barometers to identify certain broad areas like overcrowding, the hygienic factors, the medical issues, the rehabilitation issues. All those factors are taken into consideration of determining whether the centers are rated good, satisfactory, and unsatisfactory. If you would peruse the last submitted national inspection plan released on the 10th of March this year for the current performance cycle 2021-2022, in there you would see that where the center was assessed on a previous occasion, what was its rating? And that would give you an indication of how JIGS has now improved from the previous cycle to the current cycle, trying to improve the condition of that specific center being assessed and inspected. So this is one of the ways that JIGS has now leaped forward, trying to improve on its performance and its standards of working. Maybe what is the hurdles and what are some of the failures? As you already heard, I don't want to sing the song, but it's the budget cut. And this budget cut has a significant impact on what we would call our ICCV programs, Honorable Chair, where we have these ICCV stations at specific centers throughout the country at almost 243 centers. If one goes back into the 2019-2020 performance cycle, you would identify that out of the 136 identified inspections, it was in the COVID period, we only conducted 131 out of 136, which we were a shortfall of 5. And these 5 were recorded in our annual report, reasons being because it was already determined the lockdown, and these 5 centers could not be assessed. So that gives you an overall rating of 96% overall performances of our key performance area, which is our inspections. I would like to touch on one more aspect of Honorable Member Jele, and that is the impact of the treatment of inmates vis-a-vis officials. Now, one would find what comes through very strongly in our reports and our investigation reports, Mr. Chair, and I think from time we should now start submitting these investigation reports to the Honorable Chair for circulation. What comes through very strongly on violence and the use of force is gang-related issues, where gang-related violence has actually erupted immensely over the last performance cycle that we had actually conducted special investigations on the use of force at Mangaung, Kuala Kibushwa, and currently we are busy looking at St. Albans. These are the three centers where the judge had summoned us to look at the use of force. And whilst I speak of this, maybe an announcement, Honorable Chair, is that JIGS is holding what we would call an international webinar on the 27th and 28th of May on the use of force. It's a two-day seminar which covers international trends on the use of force within places of confinement, brought down to our regional levels that are our SADC nations, and finally into the South African context on the use of force. That's an announcement, Honorable Chair. I think the last one is on the determination of number of inspections in the Eastern Cape 27th, as I've already alluded to. It's on a rotational basis. If we find that St. Albans is always on an annual chart, you'll find St. Albans. So your prominent large centers are always assessed annually. That is given because of its complexities and its major challenges which those centers have, like your Paulsmo, like your Mangaung, Durban, etc. So they are always on the national inspection plan. On a rotational basis, we bring in the other centers to cover them to ensure that all centers are covered within a cycle of 24 months. This is my submission on all the questions posed. I hope I've covered them all, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, CEO. Over to you, Commissioner. Members, maybe we can have a 5 minutes stretch break as the commissioner is still trying to upload his slides. Can we come back at 10 past 12?
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. How are you?